Is this like on the internet right now?
We are now live.
Okay. Who's on the other end? How many people are possibly watching?
I don't know. We'll see.
I guess we'll find out. Right now, zero.
Well, okay. This doesn't show LinkedIn.
But it doesn't show LinkedIn. So hey, everyone.
We're live.
It's Cataloging Cocktails live from Data Council, Austin.
I don't think there's booze in that.
There may not be booze in Ben's drink.
I think it's a watermelon.
And we've got beers, which is a little counter to the Cataloging Cocktails moniker. But
and there's some food around here, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But so, it's been a fun conference so far.
Yeah.
We're in day two.
And we're going to start bringing in people here. This is going to be a weird episode.
We're live. My nose.
So we're going to just be pulling people in and asking them, what's your honest, no BS take on the data world at the data council? What did you learn? What are you annoyed about? Ben, how's that?
I don't know what that is.
Is it cheesy enough?
I think it's like a fried mac and cheese thing. It's not great.
So what did you learn in the last 2 days here?
What did I learn?
I learned that in 2021, we thought we were all changing the world, man. Turns out we're just hawking software and mostly hawking software to each other.
And there's no booze in that one yet. So,
yeah. You know, it's.
But at least the bubble's a little burst now, and we're leveling out a little
now
bit, right?
This is when the real work begins. So, there's this thing that VCs say every time you raise money, it's like, it's the second most annoying thing. The first most annoying is when the economy goes to shit, and they're like, this is when companies are forged, which I've already said earlier in this conference. The second most annoying thing is you raise money and they're like, congratulations, we're so excited to have you as a partner and all that. And then they're like, and now the real work begins. And you're like, one, you asshole. And two, they're kind of right. Like, raising money doesn't really count for anything. You know, we raised all the money. We spent all the money. We have none of it left. But now
the real work begins.
Just we're kind of in debt. It's like, you know.
So what's the actual real work that needs to be done then? Let me rephrase this.
Okay.
What is the work that we have been doing if it hasn't been real then?
Well, we've mostly been making like swag and hosting conferences. And
I mean, stickers are nice.
There's some nice stickers.
Everybody likes stickers and things like that.
DLT Hub. I'm an investor in DLT Hub. That's a good sticker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll promote that one.
We like this sticker.
All right, we got that non-salesy line.
Yeah. buy DLT Hub. That, I don't know. Do they, I don't, can you even buy it yet? I don't know.
go to their website.
I'm not an informed investor.
Not been working. We thought we were.
We were working. Which is that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that got created that's like, it's noisy. It's what happens. It's how this stuff happens. It's progress, you know. Progress is, we all lurch forward and crazy things happen and we pick up the pieces and we keep going. And that's the optimistic stance that I probably should take.
Well, you know, there's the AI thing now.
Heard of it.
Yeah. It may or may not save us all. I don't know.
I mean, I actually do think there's like, I don't think AI will save us. I do think it is an interesting discontinuity of sorts. And we've been trying a bunch of things in a particular way. It hasn't necessarily all gone great. I think there have been things that have been better. There's a lot of workflows that are better. It's like much easier to do a lot of things now than it was before. It's not that much more valuable perhaps, but like it's easier. It's nice for the people to do it. I do think the AI like has the potential to change the way that we think about like what data is for and how we actually approach it. That is not a step change in the sense of like, oh my God, now we have a magic pot that will do everything for us. But a step change in the sense that like sort of shuffles things up a lot such that whatever comes out on the other side is suddenly a little bit of a different perspective on like what we're trying to do with it or data or whatever. There's a couple of examples of this that are like more specific.
Sure, that's a fair take.
Yeah. I don't know if we have time for that on the
Twitch stream.
Data.
Well, let me bring it on this side. We got Ernie, who's actually was one of the very early Cataloging Cocktails guests before we officially started to have guests.
Oh, you have a proper cocktail.
Ernie was one of our original, one of our early guests on the podcast. You've been in the data space for a very long time. A good stint running product over at Manta. Now you're over at IBM, right?
Yeah, so back at IBM, actually.
Back at IBM, that's true, yeah.
It's the second time I've been through an acquisition there. So,
what's your honest...
I was with DataStage originally with Essential in 2005. So then, you know, decided to leave.
The so-called legacy stack now, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. But actually, no, it's been reinvented on the cloud now and pretty exciting.
That's true.
It brought back the brand from the ashes you know, really saw its value in a hybrid cloud scenario. And so DataStage is back and going, which is great for, my perspective. I was a product manager for it back in 2000, you know, so 24 years ago. But what's really cool about, you know, I left IBM because I felt like they weren't paying enough attention to lineage. So I went to Manta because Manta was like an informal partner, but I left on good terms. It was all good. And then myself and others tried to, you know, work it out so that we had a partnership with IBM again. And, you know, I kind of thought maybe in the future that might be something that they'd want to pluck us and take us back. And it never thought it was going to happen as soon as it did. But in October, I became part of the team again. And my mission now is to make sure that everybody on my former team is cooperating with everybody on the new family that I belong to. And so far, it's going out really well. Pretty exciting.
So you got decades of experience and knowledge in the space. And now what have you learned in the last couple of days here that you're like, oh, this is actually different, better, going somewhere? Or is this the same old stuff? What's your honest, no BS take here?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is, having done this ever since day one of my career, so 42 years of just working with data and always in this same area that, you know, at least we're all in terms of, you know, helping data to be more consumable, better understood, you know, whether it's lineage or it's the wonderful glossary work and stuff that you guys do to help people understand it better. So the one thing that kills me is that, you know, 42 years ago, I was helping move data from MVS, COBOL files, moving it over to the user operating system at the time that was called CMS. And we've improved the technology, GUIs, you know, we see stuff on our phones now, we create charts, they're all pretty and we can do so much stuff with it. But the fundamental problem of having data that's not fit for user consumption is still exactly the same. We haven't gotten any better at, you know, doing transformations at some other place. Oh, you have nicer tools to transform it with. You know, if you want to talk about, you know, DBT and all these great things now, and we went through Informatica and DataStage, and years ago we were doing fourth generation languages. It's the same damn problem. The data is not understood by the users. They don't know what it is. They don't know where it is. They don't know what it means. They can't find the people that really know about it and care about it without having to pick up the phone, even with all the advancements that we've done. So the problem is still the same. And I think that's one piece that disappoints me a little bit.
But why? Why is it the same? Like, why do we still have these problems? I mean, this is something this keeps me up at night.
Because nobody actually wants it.
So it's like
if you're trying to sell the same thing for 40 years and nobody buys it, at some point you got to wonder, like, if you're selling something nobody wants.
Well, I think there's been attempts over the years, databases trying to put transformations, you know, deep inside the database. Mm-hmm. And then I will tell you this, like, subtle things have improved. No one messes around with how to format dates anymore. Okay, and back in the day, a couple decades ago, before we cared about representing dates as an integer from some base date, the nightmares that used to occur just because somebody wanted to represent something in month, day, year versus year, month, day. I mean, it was just like, that was manipulation. That was transformation to move bytes around. I mean, that's a simple primitive example, but at least we eliminated that problem. But still, we're still transforming data all over the place. It's probably stored a little bit nicer when it's in JSON or something, but I don't feel like we've solved that fundamental problem.
So 20 now. Years from now, we're going to still have this problem. It's not going to get solved.
Maybe. Well, maybe we'll have AI to do the transformations for us.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
maybe. I think what's interesting is like the rate of change, right? Like obviously the data space, the AI space is constantly evolving. And because of that, I feel like we're always playing catch up. And I think that's one of the hardest parts.
Yeah, no.
Especially for anything that's going to be in the metadata layer or things like that, is you're always like, we got to integrate with more things. So I don't know, I don't think that means it's inherently a bad thing. It just means that we're always playing a game of catch up.
And the users still feel the same way. you go to every site now, and even though they're using fancier tools, they're still frustrated with not getting what they need.
I guess it's also become just a status quo. People are just used to it. That's the way how life is, and period.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm even kind of depressed with this.
I mean, that's, you know, we can keep trying to make fetch happen.
Yeah. So what should we be doing?
You know, I don't know. Well, I don't know. It's a good time.
All right. Well, did you learn anything new?
At this conference, I was only able to be here today. But I think seeing some of the cool stuff on, you know, vectorization and vector database and a couple of things like that. That was cool.
Yeah.
Some good new startups here and doing some creative things. I think that was really neat. I think learning a little bit more about orchestration as well. I mean, all I hear is airflow all the time, and you can compare it to other orchestration tools from the past, but it looks like there's some challengers now. Which is good to see. You need more competition in that space to kind of level set.
Yeah, Dagster, et cetera.
Yeah, I was very impressed with the presentation that Pete did from Dagster. So I got to look into that a little bit more. So I think that'll be one big takeaway from me.
Yeah.
I think compared to previous years, and just in general, I think the AI has gone up, and I feel BI is kind of like that one is
booming
down.
Was BI big at this conference?
No, it's booming always.
Always booming?
You gotta buy BI.
It's always booming.
Yeah.
I feel like
the most important part.
There weren't a lot of explicit talks about BI because I think it's so much just embedded in everything.
It's just
right?
Understood that you need it.
Yeah.
Nobody was here selling laptops either.
Yeah.
No, that's a valid point. That's a valid point.
It's true. Yeah.
Gotta have your charts. Man,
dashboards
too. Conversational BI.
But now that Mode is part of ThoughtSpot, are dashboards dead?
I thought dashboards are dead. I'm just reading.
Yeah,
saying things that I've read, repeating things.
No, they're being reinvented. Man, it's it's good. They're all good. They're
dashboard,
all good.
Mashup.
Hashboards, you need a hashboard.
Mashups.
You have different names for it all the time. It's like, how many different ways can we describe a place where you store data where you're going to access it for decision support?
Yeah.
It was an information warehouse in the late 80s, then moved to data warehouses and data marts, and now we have data lake houses. But really, when it comes all down to it,
what was the quote
it's
from
still just a storage location for data that you want
to the quote from last week, a lake house is where your data goes on for vacation. That was from Scott last week.
I mean,
at the end of the day, I always say it's like you move data, you store and compute data, and you use data. That's it.
And that problem is like what I said. It's exactly the same it was 40 years ago.
Yeah, and BI falls into the use
data.
Part. Right? You got to use the data. You got to analyze it.
Most important thing.
Now, in all fairness, the technologies that have come along have been able to handle larger volumes.
Yeah,
for more efficient. I mean, you know, so it's, you can't poo-poo on the technology, but the problem is still the same thing that we're dealing.
All right. Well, Tim, what have you learned?
Well, I think that the talk that I enjoyed was from Dhruv, the CTO of Honeyhive. That was today. And he was talking about LLMs for evaluating other LLMs. And that was a cool talk.
Good.
I like that.
Go ahead.
Sounds good. And so I thought that was interesting. One of the reasons why I'm here is I want to understand the AI stack more and how all these things are fitting together. And so that was an interesting thing for me. So like, you know, different LLMs. An interesting thing was the biases that like certain LLMs have biases. Like for example, GPT-4 actually has a tendency to prefer its own responses. Whereas if you feed it Claude and a llama and things like that, it tends to be more critical.
What if you lie to it and you say, this is your response, which is not?
That's a good question.
What would it do then?
I mean, also in this morning, Joe Gonzalez from Berkeley, because I think that the work from this lab at Berkeley was the one who started the lab. We can use LLMs to do the comparison. Mm-hmm. And they realize, like, oh, well, if I say compare this with that, well, always the first thing you gave it is the thing it kind of had more biased preference to. So it's like, so when they actually started doing the analysis of the result of the thing they did, they realized, oh, didn't do that well. So I think that's why people are realizing that we need to have different ways of evaluating this.
So what did you like the most?
Or
get the most from so far? I guess tomorrow too.
Oh, I mean, I think I'm with Ben. It's like we're seeing the same thing over and over again. And yeah, everybody's AI is the same conversations about AI. I mean, I think it's, I'm not leaving with something, blown away. I think we're just continuing to hear the same thing that we were hearing on the LinkedIns, on the blog. So, but I guess that's what, it's more validation, I guess, what's right. Coming up.
Now, have you guys done Data Council before? It seems like it's a very good place for vendors to certainly meet up. I don't know how many.
I think it's a good place
customers and decision makers come here.
Yeah, it's that. It's a party for the people who are in the industry.
No, a party. We're all learning something. But I get your point.
Yeah.
And a good place for startup vendors looks like.
Well, I think this is an opportunity for a lot of the startups who are just starting. Right. That's how they kind of.
I'm going to this demo thing.
Right, sure.
See, yeah.
Okay.
And how much recruiting happens in these hallways? Mm-hmm. I wonder.
Yeah,
that's a good opportunity.
Well, you've got VCs walking around, you've got startups walking around, people who are data engineers, data scientists, looking for kind of, you know, where's the next spot they want to be at, you know, right? So
vice versa, if you want to poach somebody.
I think of it as kind of a cool kids in data kind of situation, which I enjoy, but it certainly is a specific thing, right?
Yeah. Going back to I want to update my answer. I think yesterday there was a good data culture and people conversations. That one I like. I mean, I think that's an important stuff. People just understand a lot of it. It kind of seems obvious, but then I realize it's not obvious. It's like, hey, how do you understand the business value so you know that what you're doing is like kind of 101, but I realize that it's not 101 for a lot of people. So I actually appreciate, I'm very grateful and thankful to know that people are actually going to those types of conversations. And I think I'd argue that the folks who are actually eager to learn more about the people, the culture, the business sides, they're the next leaders.
Makes sense.
Okay. They're the ones who are going to be connecting the dots all the way, who'd be able to go talk, be technical, and go all the way talk around to the business. So it's like, what's it called? This guy from AWS, Gregor Hope, he has this analogy, going up the architect elevator. Should be able to go down to the engine room, all the way to the penthouse, able to understand and navigate that. Yeah. Not many people do that. I think that's a superpower. But I do genuinely believe that something you can learn. That's something you can go learn, and then you figure out where you feel more comfortable and who you partner more with and so forth. So,
now the most successful data professionals I always saw were ones that may have had a programming background. They had some level of technology. They felt comfortable with it, but it wasn't their thing. They didn't want to dive in and just start coding Java or something. So they gravitated towards something that, once they learn the business, they could do exactly what you're saying and bring the two together. And those have been the people that then became data governance professionals. I mean, you can take that wherever you want, but it's always somebody that can kind of put one foot in both camps.
Yeah, bridging the two sides.
Right. So from a generational point of view, people are just starting their careers now. Are we going to see that to continue? Is that continuing to happening? Or... let's rephrase this. I sometimes feel that we're going to not see that anymore, that there's a new generation coming out of just new technical folks, and they're either going into one side or the other, but that bridging part is missing. I haven't.
It could be, but you want to get me on a soapbox?
Yes.
Here?
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the things that is good is that there are degrees now in things like data science.
That's true.
So some places are training folks to be data people. Now, how well they blossom in that and how well whether they go down a rat hole or not, it will be interesting to see. But at least we're teaching people the value of data. And if that's got to be part of any curriculum that's designed towards a data science oriented degree. At the same time, especially coming from an ETL background, it it kills me to see that people are coding in solutions like Python that are interpreted code. It's the same as the damn interpreted code that I was dealing with in fourth generation languages in the 80s. Can't figure it out unless you want to go pouring through and reading through somebody's code. They can be as creative and free as they want to without any rigidity, and nothing comes out of it that tells you that it's metadata oriented. And that's what ETL tools really did. You dragged and dropped, you pointed and clicked, it built all this SQL behind the scenes. You didn't have to think about SQL. It just all took care of it. And now I see people pouring their life into Python and doing stuff in Spark. I'm nothing against that, but it's just amazing that they just dropped all this tooling that did a lot of that work for you.
I would say I have things against that. I think that's the wrong thing to do.
Well,
don't you think?
Clearly, there's no code, low code tools that are surviving, trying to make their case.
Yeah.
Matillion and others. I suppose you could, maybe DBT fits into that paradigm as well. Yeah. But there's still a ton of people that are just saying, just open the code and just go for it. So somewhere there's a population, you know, in this younger generation that's coming into the world now that just says, I just want to do it myself. Yeah. The heck with it. And they're going to create code that two decades from now, we're still going to be trying to decipher.
Yeah. So I think this is interesting because, the modern data stack paradigm was very focused on EL, extract load, right, into the data lake. And then, of course, DBT very much rose to prominence around the T, right? So now that it's in the data lake, I can go do, TTTTT to it until I get it into the shape that I want it to be in, right? We kind of threw away a lot of the ETL, right, kind of approach that, people can complain about Informatica and things like that, right? But, ultimately, there was a paradigm that was established there around ETL to integrate data and transform it.
Bashing his heads against ELT that was pushed by companies like Teradata.
Yeah.
Which basically said, load the garbage data into Teradata, right? And then transform it inside of there because it would be more efficient to do it there. So that was also a ELT approach as opposed to an ETL approach.
Yeah.
And those two used to clash with each other kind of all the time.
So have we learned anything from all this? What's the takeaway?
I don't know. That's why I'm...
Integration sucks? I don't know, right?
I'll tell you a story. Let me tell you a story.
Yeah.
So I'm going way back now, but I did a presentation where I had actually constructed from the fourth generation language that I grew up on, which was Focus. That's what I cut my teeth on.
I'm actually not familiar with Focus.
Information builders.
Information builders.
Awesome tool. But I built this sophisticated report that actually generated a calendar from a database. It was, at the time in 1988, it was pretty cool. But I finished this whole presentation and I got a comment. Back then it was written comments. There's nothing on their phones. They actually had to write out what they felt about your presentation. Mm-hmm. And it was from a guy at the time who was clearly my age now, who said, "Amazing presentation, Ernie, but we're still going to be deciphering in 15 years, 20 years, all the code that you're building now and how the heck you actually pulled it off." And so it makes me laugh because that was a 100% runtime parsed language, no compilation, just you go on the fly. And that's clearly where I see the attraction to Python now. You get instant results because you can just sit there and just code and go away.
Yeah. See what it looks like.
But people are writing code that is not maintainable.
So
it worries me.
Okay, so write the letter for your old self, right? Write the letter for the junior kind of data professional now. What would you tell them?
I would probably want to bring in a lot of the things that Pete from Dagster talked about, is that you've got to be conscious of the assets that you're working with. And so inside of your workflow and inside of your transformations, give respect to the assets and the metadata that they produce and who they belong to and what they mean, what they own, like stuff that's your domain in the catalog while you're trying to code these transformations.
So,
I think the key word that was respect. And I think that's what's missing, is that I should have respect for what I'm trying to interpret what this means. And I should have respect for that, what that mean is. And I should have respect for the people who are actually going to make use of the stuff that I'm writing right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a sort of empathy also, that I think we don't treat this. Right. My argument is that we don't treat the semantics, the metadata knowledge with the respect it deserves.
If it's just a dumbass string sitting in JSON. Nobody cares.
No, I'm just going to write this code.
Another thing I think about, which is connected to respect, is a code of conduct. Right. We know the guys over at Data Kitchen, for example, around the whole, you know, data ops, data kind of manifesto and all that. Right.
That nice infinite diagram.
That's good stuff. Right. I mean, like, that kind of thing exists on software. Right. We all know what agile means in software. Right. But we don't have that similar level of respect and thoughtfulness on the data side. I mean, and I'm not going to say that categorically about everyone, but, you know. But it's not at the same level, and people aren't thinking about how they're gonna do the right things to balance resilience and future proofing with let me sling some Python and just get from A to B, right?
Right. And for what it's worth, that's also the pressures that's always been on the business. It's a whole lot, cheaper.
Well, I think this goes back to what I always say: it's a balance between efficiency and resilience, and this stuff, being respectful and empathy. Pathetic is not always the fast thing to go do, so.
And that's been true forever.
I need to get shit done, so I'm just gonna do it fast. So.
Right.
Sorry, I'm barging through, but hey, we got more folks who want to come in.
Yeah.
All right, come on.
You
can stick around. Have time.
No, I'm gonna hang around over here so we get somebody else in the camera.
Hey. So,
Reza. Hey. Nice to meet you. How would you like to give a quick takeaway?
We're here live.
Cool, live.
Cataloging cocktails.
Okay.
Reza, talk about where you're from and
what's
your conference.
And what's the
you.
Honest, no BS take right now?
Yeah.
Oh, on everything. Okay. So my name is Reza Puri. I'm CEO and founder of ProductBot AI. Here today at the Data Council, and just got in a little bit late today, so. I don't have a hot take on this in particularly just yet. So
in general, what's your honest, no BS take of the data world right now?
Of the data world? I think it's we're at this critical juncture between how generative AI uses data and uses it effectively to get high quality results, right? And so what I've been seeing over the past year running a Gen AI startup is a lot of companies, they want to use their data, but they don't want to put their data into the AI systems yet. There's an issue of data privacy and data leakage, who controls the data, right? And so I've seen, these closed box models like OpenAI getting a lot of flack. I've seen a lot of, we do not want to use OpenAI. This is our agreement with you. Sorry, use something else, right?
Yeah.
And so these these black box models are catching a lot of flack because they're not open and they're not transparent. And I think openness and flexibility of where your AI kind of gets deployed helps the data get unlocked.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's my hot take.
All right.
Yeah. I don't know.
No,
I like it. Did you learn anything interesting on the conference that you didn't know before you came in?
I got here super late today.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Came in last minute, coming in hot from a couple of meetings. So.
Oh, no, that's cool. Well, curious to hear what you find out. I feel like at Data Council, it's about the parties afterwards. So you get the happy hour of the parties. That's where you're going to figure out some new stuff. So
we got another one. Yeah. Solomon, come on in.
Yeah, Solomon.
All right.
Oh,
all right.
I'm going to get going.
All right, see you, man.
Cheers.
We're live right now. So, what's your honest, no BS take on what you've learned here at Data Council?
Data Council and then the data world in general.
Oh, my God.
Honest, no BS, non-salesy take.
Non-sales. Let's see. Okay, so catalogs and cocktails, non-alcoholic cocktail.
Yeah.
We got a beer, so no cocktail.
There you go.
All good.
My biggest hot take from this conference, I saw a talk on A/B testing, and one of my biggest, probably controversial opinions that I've literally never shared anywhere until just now on this is that A/B testing
oftentimes doesn't work for business cases in the way that we would like it to. A lot of the core assumptions on whether on experimentation have been cargo culted from academia into business, where it's not as true, and listening to the confidence of some of the people who are like super pro A/B testing, I don't think it's justified. That's my super hottest take that I have that I've literally
okay,
never
so
shared before.
Give an example on like, okay, people are saying you should do A/B testing on this particular scenario, and you're like,
but here's
bullshit.
How it actually plays out
bullshit,
or whatever,
that's
right?
What
yeah.
We're...
I mean, like, just to start, there are some really flawed core assumptions, like 95% confidence interval for business decision making. Like, business decisions are not made with nearly 95% confidence in almost any case. You know, for scientific testing, you're trying to find, like, truths that people can build on top of in, like, a peer-referenced way. That's not business decision-making. And so if you only – I mean, listen, if you're Amazon and you want to be damn sure that nothing that you do accidentally tanks revenue by 20%, then yes, you want to stay mostly static and only make a change when you're absolutely sure that it can't mess anything up. For most other companies, for most other use cases, that's not your situation.
Yeah.
And A/B testing should be seen more as a way to keep things static without ever making a mistake versus, like, if you have that business, great.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that business, then you don't have that
so
business.
So this is an interesting topic here. So I want to even double-click one more click here, which is that, you know, why do you think this is, right? Is it because of instrumentation? Like, for example, if you're an e-commerce company or Amazon, you can instrument more detailed. Or is it around things like the difference between trying to optimize a local maxima versus a more interesting global kind of point that you're trying to jump to? Or like, what's your take on why
there's
it doesn't
like
work?
So many things that are wrong.
Okay, it's many. It's plethora.
The 95% confidence interval.
I like this.
This is a real hot take.
This is a real
hot take.
Well, but here. I think it's a practical point. I mean, it's not to say don't do A/B testing, right? Because there's a lot of places where it's very useful. But it also explains like why a lot of companies aren't doing a ton of A/B testing or ABC or whatever kind of testing you want to do, right, on various decisions and various things, because it's maybe in many cases it's not that you're like you're bad because you're not doing it. It's like, oh, it's like actually not applicable.
Yeah, and even when it is applied, it's oftentimes applied incorrectly.
Ah.
So. Yeah, I can get the assumption, so.
Yeah.
Well, that was a good one. Thanks,
that's
that was good,
Aaron. That's
my... All right, we got somebody else.
I appreciate it.
Julian, want to join us?
Yeah.
Sure, what are we talking about?
Yeah, come on in.
Come on in.
Yeah.
We're here.
Hello.
Live.
Oh, it comes with...
Julian, welcome to Catalog and Cocktails.
Thank
Honest
you. Are we live? We're live.
We are live.
We've been live for over half an hour now.
So we're here at the Data Council in Austin.
Hello.
Yeah. Great talks today.
Thank you. Honest, what's your honest, no BS take on what you've learned here at Data Council and in general in the data world right now?
I mean, my favorite part is the hallway track, right? Like, you catch up with people, like with John. Hey.
Hi.
Say hi.
John,
hey.
Get your
hi. Hi.
with Wes, with other people. So I've been busy today because I was track host and I spoke and I was moderating a panel. So I've been all over the place. So I'm kind of in the, you know, high on of just the stress and all of that, and just like getting on the kind of relaxing now.
Yeah,
it's been great. A lot of good good people, good discussions. It's been great. So on the data engineering track, which is the one I focused on, it's been great to see more talk about data fusion, Aero, talk about orchestration, talk about lineage, talk about various things like that. And it's been great. Oh, I met Andrew Lamb in person. That was great. I think we had interacted before on social media and stuff, but it's the first time we met in person. And we actually reconnected when I started Parquet. I had read this Vertica paper. There's a Vertica 7 years later paper. And he actually is the main author on the paper, which I didn't realize. And it was great. Oh, my God. There's lots of influence.
Yeah.
it's both directions.
I feel like this conference is always like bringing, you know, the data kind of influencers and ground shakers, groundbreaker kind of type of people. Let's bring them all together.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Well, give some talk about this.
Harold, come on over.
So there's a lot of decision of things, open source things that happen in the hallway.
What am I joining here?
I don't know. We're live right now.
Welcome to Catalog and Cocktails
podcast.
Okay. I sincerely did not mean to.
What's your honest no BS take on the, what you've learned at the conference, just in the data world in general?
Wow. That I don't want to do too much AI and I want to keep focusing on data.
That's an honest no BS take right there. That's my honest
unpopular opinion.
I don't care.
I'm sure there's some people who are listening right now who are like, you know, this AI thing's kind of weird. I'm not sure I'm into it.
Well, at least the number is going up.
Yeah. This is not even counting the LinkedIn listeners and stuff. But okay, so why? Are just AI just you're annoyed?
No, I'm not annoyed. I'm just like, I really love data. I really love data infrastructure. And that's just always been the thing that it makes me happy. So I'm going to keep doing that.
So you don't do AI infrastructure?
What's the difference?
Exactly.
You get drafted into it automatically, right?
I guess I am. That's okay.
Yeah,
I'm
but not by choice.
What it is?
No, that's good. I did appreciate that. Of all the tracks, only one of them was generative AI track. Mm-hmm. I was worried that maybe it was going to dominate the conference, but actually, I think that it's been balanced.
In our data lineage panel, no one said AI. I think maybe Sherry
She
brought up the
brought
AI.
It up at the end. We should have kicked her out.
Exactly.
Like,
it was a take on like you can't expect the lineage to be done by the AI. That's why you actually need the real lineage.
Oh yeah.
So it was a fair. Yeah. So
yeah, I guess we could try.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So, long live data AI.
Long live data.
Long data.
That's all I'm gonna say. Not going to diss on anyone. We have to go.
You guys have to go.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Follow me on Twitter.
Don't follow me on Twitter. Follow me.
Hit the subscribe button.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Thanks for playing along. All right. Well, Tim.
I mean, it's always fun getting to meet up with friends, with colleagues, with contacts.
Oh, wait, there's people over there walking by. Ryan! All right, I'm just trying to follow people to get in here. We're live here.
Come
over here.
Hey, right. Welcome to Catalog and Cocktails.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, we're streaming live.
Okay, we're still here. So, what's your honest, no BS take on what you've learned at the conference, in the data world in general?
Yeah.
Oh man, put me on the spot.
Yeah.
My hottest take. I would say my hottest take is that we still have a long way to go with AI, folks. It's all we're talking about. And yet, we still have a long way to go. One thing I'm sick of is talking to people about text to SQL. I will tell you that because I think you and I, Juan, both know that this is not going to work. At least without some good metadata layer in the middle that is giving the AI meaningful information in order to generate query results.
Without the AI, is going to start.
Right.
Without the context, there's no magic.
There is no magic.
I'll tell people very explicitly, if you're going to do all this chat with your data over your structured SQL data, you're not putting any context, you will fail.
There you go.
Don't be a failure.
Yes. Yeah. Speaking I agree completely.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, what's your honest OBS take?
My hot take is that I'm part of the grandfather club here at... I'm one of the ancients. Like, these young kids are solving such phenomenally interesting problems.
It's okay, Joe. Old guys.
Old guys. But while I feel like we do have a long ways to go, it's really inspiring to see, like, the iteration speed that this young generation is building, like... My ultimate goal in life is to upload myself. And so I feel a little bit better after seeing what's happening. I'm one step closer. So.
You're like, we might get there in the next couple of decades.
We're going to get there.
Well, this is interesting because we had Ernie Ostick from IBM Manta, and he's kind of saying the opposite. It's like,
we're still solving the same problems that were solving 20 years ago, 40 years ago. And
Well, we still get flat tires. We fight about where to go eat dinner. We can't hook up a laptop in a conference room. Yeah. We get a common cold.
Printers get jammed.
But yeah, AI is amazing.
Yeah,
I love this. I love when we just go back here. That was a great one. That was a great one. We'll still be complaining about that. What should we watch on Netflix? And blah, 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 stuff, right?
Yep. But right. Maybe we don't need to solve those problems, right? Those are the truly
human
things.
Those are the human things. That's what keeps us human.
Yeah.
But all right, Ryan. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. It's good seeing you.
Appreciate it.
Take care, man.
Yeah.
This is cool. You're doing live from the show.
Awesome. Oh, thanks. All right. Yeah, it's fun.
Anybody else? Right? We've been talking for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And people are inside. Probably get another beer.
Yeah, I guess we'll get another beer. John, did you want to get any hot take in? Are you good?
I'm good.
You're good. All right.
All right.
How about this for a hot take?
All right.
Hey, everybody. It is awesome to be able to work with these two guys. I hope everybody's enjoyed the hot takes from Data Council. It's been a long time since I've made an appearance on Catalogs and Cocktails, maybe 4 years even.
Yes, I think you're one of the true OGs, yeah.
But it has been, I guess my hot take is, it has been incredibly fun to be here at Data Council, to be able to see old friends like HO and Julian, and new friends like our friend Reza, who's just behind us right now, gave a hot take earlier. And it is always great to just see what people are actually working on, right? And I think that's the point of this event, is to see people working on real problems, figure out what those solutions look like, and then figure out how to get them to scale. I think that's where we're at with a lot of this generative AI talk, is how do we scale these solutions? How do we make them trustworthy, and how do we get these things into production?
Yeah.
Saw so many great talks on that from... You know, the one that, like, you know, Tim and I were in on evaluating LLMs, to things like, you meet new friends here too, like, you know, folks from Pinecone who are talking about, like, how you make reg applications better and, you know, different methods of fine tuning. And I think that to get practical like that is really special, and to be in a space where you can do that. It's been great to do it in our hometown.
Yeah. That's the other thing. We're looking good in Austin. Yeah.
It's always fun to do this in Austin, right? In our backyard here. And I think that was well stated.
More.
Yeah. Hey, absolutely. Right.
Oh, there we go. We got the podcast going.
We're live.
We're live. Okay.
Paul, honest, no BS takes about Data Council and data world in general.
So I think one of the most interesting talk that I went to was this one on evals, and the reason on like large language model evals
was the Honeycomb one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think that's like the fourth time it's already come.
Really?
Out. Yeah.
Really?
That may have been one of the breakouts of the conference. Yeah.
So I think it was, and the reason for that is that the evals are very, very unsolved right now. And the problem, the reason that is the case is because most of the actual development happens and it's local. It's stuff that you're doing in CI, like when you're running these processes to determine, hey, is this change good to deploy, you know, to production? Like, is this legit? But most of the vendors trying to help with evaluation are like up in the cloud. So like what he went through is the actual pipeline that some really serious companies are doing to be able to do this, to be able to get the right systems in place to do eval through this sort of multi-stage process where you go through this, you know, sort of vibe test, and then you go through, okay, a little bit more sophisticated testing, and then that just gets more and more sophisticated going on. So it's really cool. It was one of the better things I've heard on LLM evals, which I feel like is a very under-talked about area, because it's so important to building a non-deterministic app.
Yeah, that was a good one. And he helped it be not cryptic.
Yeah.
So you know, it wasn't like some black magic.
I'm pissed
it was very
off.
Incremental.
I missed this talk.
You should have been there, man.
I took a couple screenshots of some of his slides. Yeah, it was very good. Drew over at Honey Hive. So appreciate you if you're listening, or if this makes its way over to you. So yeah, I appreciate it. Any other hot takes or learnings? Or
that's my one right there.
Awesome.
All right.
So cool. Thanks for stopping by.
All right.
Maybe final takeaways and hot takes.
This is the first time that we haven't done the takeaways.
I know. No takeaways or takeaways. Well, my at least conclusion statement is going to be, you know, this is a fun conference because everyone's just trying to, it's smart people trying to figure stuff out and sharing what they're learning, sharing the progress, and and sharing some open questions and skepticism too, right? Like, yeah, you know, modern data stack, data mesh, all these things, you know, there's a lot of good stuff happening, AI, right? A lot of good stuff happening, and there's also a lot of question marks. So we've got work to do, everybody, in the data and AI space, and let's roll our sleeves up and figure it out.
That's it.
All right, cheers.
Cheers. Thanks, everybody, for listening in, and we'll be back next week.
Yep, see you next week.